Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
Indeed, it is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, episode 111, Derek. I think there was something big on 111. I don't necessarily know what it was. Maybe I think there was like a Raw that was like on 111, or I think something like that, that Bret Hart came back on a Raw and had his Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels type thing. But I got to figure out what day was that. I think it was 1-1-1-1. But anyways, 1-11, we are here, Tuesday Night Titans, Pancakes and Power Slams. I am here with Derek, the Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent. We are going to have a fun time tonight. A whole bunch to talk about with Raw. I have a very controversial article that I just wrote about booking Daniel Bryan, the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, until WrestleMania 31. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And Derek, the flavor of the week is we're going to go back in time from 1993 until beyond. King of the Ring.
Hey, everybody. 347-884-8452 is the number that you need to call in, like, right now. We've got 90 minutes to talk about wrestling. We've got 90 minutes to fill everything in. Never enough time. Tuesday Night Titans, the new Tuesday Night Titans. This is Pancakes and Power Slams. King of the Ring was an awesome pay-per-view that they used to have. Everybody likes tournaments. Everybody likes to have brackets. So it was always a fun pay-per-view. Great flavor of the week. We're going to nail it. Knock it out of the park. The only way that Pancakes and Power Slams knows how to, as far as I know. What about you?
You got it. The Raw was 1-3-11. The Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels was the 4th of January of 2010. And if I'm not mistaken, that was the same day that TNA decided to go on Monday nights, and that was one of the worst decisions that TNA could have ever done. It was just, I was talking to a good friend of mine, and I remember I was talking on the phone about that at that time. In 2010, we were discussing that in conversation. And from the very first week, I thought it was a bad idea. It was just a bad idea. I remember driving to my apartment and just really sitting and thinking about, I think it was that Monday, and how just kind of thinking and reflecting on and just really just really surveying TNA and how, yes, they were going to have Hulk Hogan and blah, blah, blah. Jeff Hardy, I believe, debuted that night, too. RVD, I believe, he debuted that night, too. But it was just so bad, man. It was just so bad that they decided to do that. And what's so sad about that is that there's been so many opportunities. I guess we're already going off the script here, which we do every week. But there were so many opportunities to make TNA a legitimate number two competitor. Just think about the legends they had in TNA at one point in time. You had Hulk Hogan. You had Sting. You still have Kurt Angle. Just former world champions, Christian. And, you know, you have upcoming stars like you're at that point in time, but much more established now. Your Bobby Roode, your Eric Youngs, your Christopher Daniels, Samoa Joe. And all of those, you had a really, really good talent pool of wrestlers. But the creative staff was just so horrible that the wrestlers that they had and have even that can make the company so good, it just never ceases to amaze me how for every one step forward they take about five steps back. And me as a journalist, I cover TNA material. I'm not going to bash them terribly, just because for some reason I was such a big fan of the Monday Night Wars, there's a small piece of me that's just hoping that somebody that they would have at least be a legitimate number two competitor one of these days. They've been in, I think it was 2002, so it's been 12 years since TNA has been in existence, but still, just such a far, far number two at the moment. It's just, it's really sad.
Oh, definitely. You know, the TNA, they've had the stars. I mean, for crying out loud, they still have Kurt Angle, probably one of the most talented wrestlers, grapplers, Greco-Roman, catch-as-catch-can. I mean, and they just, he's just wasting there. He's getting injured. He's just, come on. Without Kurt Angle, they'd probably be nothing. I mean, the ROH is so much better than TNA. And TNA's had the opportunities. They've had the Jeff Jarrett, the Hulk Hogan, the Stinks. Yeah. They don't know what to do with these people when they have them. I mean, they've had everybody on their creative team that I can think of. And just, they cannot gel to make a decent product to where WCW once was. And, I mean, WWE, as far as I'm concerned, they have nothing to worry about as far as any war against their company.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And another really good point that you made is that they did have the creative staff. They've had Vince Russo before. They've had Ed Ferrara before. They've had Terry Taylor before. They've had Bruce Pritchard. So they've had, you know, currently they have Al Snow, and they have Pat Kenny, who was Simon Diamond. But, I mean, just, you know, you say, you don't, and another good point you just said is they don't know what they don't know what to do when they have them. And this, as far as the talent is concerned, that's true, because AJ Styles, they let him go. They let Christopher Daniels go just recently. They let Kazarian go just recently, and it's just really, really sad. I mean, they let Chris Sabin go recently, so just really sad that they, you know, as far as Jeff Jarrett is concerned, I mean, he was a part owner of the entire company. And what's so sad about that is that, you know, they let him go. So it just really saddens me how, you know, they really have the opportunity to be a legitimate number two promotion, but just the creative. And you can't really blame them on the production either, because they have decent production. And that's one good thing. That's one thing about ECW. ECW wasn't a really big, heavy. They weren't heavy on production. At that point in time, they had such a cult-like following. They had something that was so different from the norm, different from the other competitors, that made them. That made them separate. That made them important. That made them unique. So it's really interesting to see just how just kind of run of the mill, you know, TNA is starting to be, and it's really, really sad. But, you know, I'm happy that Eric Young is champ, and this is probably the TNA discussion we're going to have for today. We're probably go from Raw to the Flavor of the Week, because we have so much to talk about for the King of the Ring. So, yeah, I mean, here's your TNA talk for today. Interesting comment on the chat room. So I'm not the norm. Bennett Brower from Saturday Night Live was Chris Farley. I'm not the norm. I'm not camera friendly. I have dried up deodorant cakes under my arms. It's just the quotations that he used to do when he was talking is absolutely hilarious. So I find more satisfaction in that than I do TNA these days. Although I'm very happy that Eric Young is champ. He deserves it. But just to let in the past month, you let Chris Sabin, Kazarian, and Christopher Daniels go. Ah, so sad. So sad. All right, let's start off with our trivia for today. Who managed the Great Muta in the WCW? Ooh, not too much of an icebreaker, huh? I decided to go difficult, slightly difficult. It shouldn't be that difficult. But, you know, there you go. Who managed the Great Muta in WCW? Ladies and gentlemen, again, 347-884-8452. We're going to start opening up the phones a little bit more. In the beginning of Pancakes and Power Slams, we were a lot more. We opened phones a lot more. We just have so much material in 90 minutes. But we definitely want to open up the phones and, you know, call in. And don't hang up and don't fret. You know, hold and at least listen to the show. 347-884-8452. Or you could just tweet at Crave Wrestling or come into the live chat room and let us know your thoughts. I think probably the most efficient way as far as being broadcasted on air is the chat room. So go in the chat room live, tweet at Crave Wrestling or 347-884-8452. And again, the trivia question on right now is who managed the Great Muta? Who managed the Great Muta in WCW. All right, for Raw, we have some interesting moments on Raw. What do you think of the beginning of Raw, Derek?
The Shield starts off and they get pretty upset. They want Evolution, obviously, and they attack Evolution backstage. And I was kind of hoping in a glimpse that Ric Flair was going to come out of that limo. Am I the only one that thought that? But
probably.
Really? Doggone it. I mean, I saw the limo pull up. I'm like, yeah, Ric Flair is going to come out and shake their hands again. They're all going to be friends and skip and frolic. But anyway, so the Shield comes out, and it was backstage, knocks out Evolution. That was a good start, I suppose, just to keep the rivalry fresh. I'm not, still not too sold on the Evolution Shield feud that's going on, but I, it's something. It's keeping the Shield in the forefront. I guess it's keeping Triple H active, so, yeah, good for Triple H. And but the Evolution clan, I just Batista and Randy Orton still just don't do anything for me. So in this factor, I kind of like to see the Shield go out on top. But it was a great start.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. I think it's important, and I said this before, I think it's very, very important for this the Evolution being there solely to put the Shield over. I don't see any type of benefit in the Shield really getting over. I don't see any benefit of the Evolution going over the Shield, just because. I mean, you have three former world champions. You have three future Hall of Famers. You have people who've been there, and that should put people over. And I think that Evolution should be there just for the sake of putting them over. And I think so far so good. Yeah, I really like what I see so far. The match on Extreme Rules, like I said, was absolutely amazing. Definitely a match of the year candidate. I was expecting that to be the best match of the night, and definitely it turned out to be that way. So it was good for me. I think it was one of those things that the Shield got a beat down, and they attacked them when they were coming out the limo, which is good. So it was good for me. I like it, and I don't think this should go on too long. Triple H did mention a rematch at Payback. Like I said before, we reported on wrestling.com that it's either going to be a six-man match or three singles matches. I'd actually prefer three singles matches because it would be a different element. And I've said this in conversations with colleagues, that I think the ideal thing for me would be that if they did the three matches, they did – and it's funny how Triple H kept talking about Roman Reigns. So that's very interesting. So it seems like we may have a Triple H Roman Reigns match, maybe at SummerSlam, but I have different plans for Triple H at SummerSlam. We'll talk about that in a minute through my article. I just came up with an interesting idea today, the booking Daniel Bryan the WWE World Heavyweight Championship until WrestleMania 31. Like I said, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I think that the three singles matches would be better. Just because it would be something different, and it would add a better element to Payback. And the thing is, we won't see the same matches all over again, because essentially we're seeing the three main events from Extreme Rules, we're seeing them all over again. And I definitely don't want to see that. That would just be that would be ridiculous. That would be pointless. And I think the biggest thing is to make Payback different. What's going to be different about Payback? Last year, what was different about Payback was that CM Punk was coming back. He was returning after leaving. He left after WrestleMania when he was a heel, came back as a babyface, and it was in Chicago crowd, so his hometown. So that was the selling point of last year's Payback. The selling point of this year's Payback, not much. The Shield and Evolution, which is good, but what's that wow factor? And I told a colleague today that Payback is one of the – I think Payback is the biggest – the most expendable pay-per-view of the year. I think it's the biggest throwaway pay-per-view of the year. It's not a gimmick-heavy – I mean, it's not based on a gimmick. It's in June. You have April big pay-per-view, and then August big pay-per-view. So Payback is quite expendable. and you're going to have to make something stand out at Payback. And with Daniel Bryan potentially not even competing, where does that, you know, where does that leave the WWE? So I think they're in a bit of a bind, Derek. I don't know if they'll, hopefully they'll scurry themselves out. But if Daniel Bryan doesn't compete, who, you know, what happens then?
If Daniel Bryan doesn't compete, then the WWE has nothing to really hone on as far as a pay-per-view. I mean, what people want to see Daniel Bryan. I mean, this, it's been such a cluster lately. I don't think they know who to really push and get behind or how to actually make a show worthwhile. It just seems like lately anymore, it's just there's so many broken pieces with the WWE that it's like it's just put together at the last minute and let's see how this works. I mean, there's really no planning for any future long-run feud that they can build that makes any decent logical sense, I guess.
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, like I said, the Shield and Evolution kind of defies that. That's about it. I mean, Cena Bray is just ridiculous to me still. I did add an interesting element to the Cena and Bray feud, just because I think, because we report on wrestling.com that it's going to go, they're expecting it to go further than even Payback potentially, and that's going to be horrible. So my thoughts are, if we have to indulge a John Cena Bray Wyatt pay-per-view, which I totally don't want to, if we have to indulge it, at least put an interesting element to it, which I'll talk about probably at the end of this Raw recap here. Again, who managed the Great Muta? Who managed the Great Muta and the WCW? You guys, it's so funny how we have people in the chat room and on Twitter, you know, interacting and being so quick to, you know, try to stump the host on unscheduled stump the host days. But when that question comes along where people don't know, it's just a bunch of crickets in the air. So, very interesting stuff. You said you know?
Oh, yeah. I think it was Gary Hart, wasn't it?
Yeah, I didn't ask you to answer. I didn't say answer.
I mean, it was Sonny Ono.
Sure. Yeah, no, it was Gary Hart. You're correct. Good job, of course, as always. All right, let's go to the next part of Raw. We have RVD defeating Jack Swagger. Very, very quick match because of my boy, Adam Rose, coming out. But what really saddens me, though, what really, really saddens me is that Fandango, he doesn't really sadden me. I just don't care. But as far as Adam Rose is concerned, he's just not getting over. And it really saddens me because he's not getting over. And he's so big. He's so big in NXT, but it goes to show how many people, and this is really sad for the WWE, because it really goes to show how many people just don't have the network. It just is so many. Either they're casual fans, the majority of the arena are casual fans, one, or two, people just don't care about having the network. The majority of the people don't care about having the network. Of course, you'll have your little corner of fans that knows the whole Adam Rose thing that he does in NXT. I'm a big Adam. I'm a Rose bud, as you can say. I like Adam Rose. I think he's fun. I think he's spunky. I think it's a very big jump from a very big, vast difference from Leo Kruger, but it's fun. It's exciting. But it's sad. It's sad to see how many people just don't have the network. That's why they're having all these promotions. I love the network. I think, you know, I'd promote it, you know, just to let people know it's good. It's a really good investment. It's only $10 a month. But it's sad that people just really don't know about Adam Rose. So this Adam Rose thing, his call-up might have been a little bit too early.
A little bit too early, but he comes out with all these people in costumes. Kind of reminds me of the Oddities back in the day. Everyone knows that didn't go over all that well. But, you know, the Adam Rose, again, the WWE just kind of seems to, you can only bring him out so many times until it gets boring. Kind of like with Bray Wyatt, when they were introducing him, you just kind of got sick of him before he even came out. And it's, I think that's kind of what they're doing. It's kind of overexposure. Let the guy wrestle. Let him do what, you know, they pay him to do. And then build the hype. I mean, build the hype with him, but, you know, show his in-ring talent. Get him into a legitimate feud and then bring out all this spectacle and good graces.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'll agree with that, unfortunately, just because, you know, people are just looking at him like, who in the
have
world
the Fandango.
Is this? Well, I think that would be good. I think that would be a good idea. I mean, you know, I understand the whole Santino and Emma thing. I like Santino and Emma. I'm cool with it. It's just the only thing is that it's really leading absolutely nowhere. I mean, it just really, there's nothing that revolves around Santino and Emma against Fandango and Layla. They'll just continue to have matches of, they'll continue to have matches against each other and then split up from each other, and then it just, mixed tag team matches. It just continues to be absolutely boring, and so I'm not a big fan of it, to be honest with you. I don't think it's at first I think it was okay, but now I just think it has no type of payoff to it. And now I think that Adam Rose would be a good addition or a good insertion to a Fandango feud, just because Santino is a comic relief and I like him a lot. However, the feud's getting old and stale, and Adam Rose and Jack Swagger is just, yeah, it's just really meh to me. I really don't see, I don't see the benefit of it. Yes, you have Zeb Culture, just because Adam Rose is English, you put him in your deportation list. But really, how far is that going to go? I really don't see that going far at all. So, sad for Jack Swagger, because he has so much potential, but it's just something about Jack Swagger that just does not click to the audience. I mean, they've tried ECW, doing the push-ups, you know, drawing the line and stepping over it. A more cocky Jack Swagger in ECW, then he wins the World Heavyweight. He wins the Money in the Bank for some odd surprise. Then he wins the World Heavyweight Championship, and that bombs. And they've tried and tried. Then last year, he wins the Elimination Chamber, becomes the number one contender when he gets with Zeb Culture, number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania 29, loses to Alberto Del Rio. So they've tried over and over again to really make him relevant, but there's just something about Jack Swagger that just does not click to the audience.
It doesn't click to the audience because, I mean, it's kind of run its course. I mean, We the People obviously doesn't hold any ground. There was some Santino left. Cesaro. So
Cesaro, yeah.
I mean, when it, there's, I mean, it's Zeb Coulter's good at what he does, but he's just been made to look like a old grandpa. There's no rhyme or reason behind keeping this thing alive if they're just going to use Jack Swagger to boost its potential. So, I mean, there's nothing Swagger. It's old. That's the thing. It's gotten old. They need to do something, recruit more people, or let Swagger go. But, I mean, Swagger is not the answer to keep this thing afloat. Zeb Coulter can be a great spokesperson for it, but he needs some ammunition. Swagger just can't do it by himself.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I just don't see. I just really don't see Jack Swagger just being around for a long time. It's sad because he has so much opportunity, but just really sad. It just really saddens me. And the thing they haven't done, they haven't given Jack Swagger an opportunity to be a babyface. And when he returned a little while ago, a lot of people thought that he was going to be a babyface, but still nothing. Still didn't, you know, still has not became a babyface, and they never gave him that opportunity to do so. For some reason, they think that he's a good heel. He's not a good heel, so it's broke, so they need to fix it. So then we see more Bo leave. I'm not too big on Bo Dallas at all. Just not really looking forward to that guy. And because when he was Bo Dallas before, when he came in the Royal Rumble a couple years back and started feuding with Wade Barrett, he was just such a cookie cutter babyface. It was just annoying. And now, you know, him as a heel works a lot better than when he was babyface, because finally he has some personality to him. But I just, so far, I'm not sold on Bo Dallas. And I've watched this. I watched him in NXT, and I'm still not a big fan. Him and Adrian Neville feuding against each other, they've put on some good matches, but. And what's so interesting about that is that Bo Dallas is brothers, real-life brothers with Bray Wyatt. So it'll be interesting to see the brothers both on WWE in interesting heel roles. So you really don't see that much in wrestling, in the history of wrestling. So next we get Alicia Fox versus Paige. This is one of the most awkward segments that I saw on Raw. You have, of course, Paige beating Alicia Fox. Alicia Fox having a promo about how the girls don't like Paige in the back. And then all of a sudden gains an advantage on Paige. And then Paige wins. She sneaks a win. And then Alicia Fox goes on this incredibly weird tangent. And I mean, who cares? I mean, it was just such a waste of time. It was such a waste of time. You're coming to tell me that the WWE creative staff, knowing how time conscious they are, allowed this to transpire on a WWE Raw show? This was such a waste of time. And I really think that I really think that they could have reconsidered this very, very much, because Alicia Fox going on a tangent made absolutely no sense to me.
It was the hardest thing to watch. I mean, it's almost like watching a puppy die. I mean, how could they say that's okay to go out and do that, throw a temper tantrum, act like a total dork, and we'll call this WWE programming. I mean, I had to explain that to some people today. And it's not, that's not wrestling. That's not what I'm here to talk about. But unfortunately, at times I do. But that's part of the game. It was absolutely disgusting. It was dumb. Oh, I'm going to take your cowboy hat and throw it on the ground. You know, big deal. I mean, it's something when Triple H or maybe like Batista or someone does it, when they can actually throw the monitors on the ground and make you think that, oh, man, this guy's upset. But she just looked like a little prissy princess that didn't get her way, and it was stupid. It was dumb. Nobody in their adult life acts like that, especially in front of 50,000 people. It was dumb.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Next question is Scotty Riggs and Marcus Alexander Bagwell formed what team in the WCW? Another WCW question for you. Ooh, how about that? And then as far as main event is concerned, you know, similar thing. I think that they're trying to do some type of weird gimmick with this. She went crazy on main event, too. So it just totally doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Just where is this leading to? Lisa Fox getting a push, which I totally could care less to see that. Next we have Kane. We had Daniel Bryan coming out and cutting a promo. And what was so interesting about this, of course, Daniel Bryan gets his yes, gets his yes chance and gets way over. But there was some, I heard a little bitty corner of boos, and I heard some people saying no. And it seems like that's what prompted Daniel Bryan to say, you know, now I see how it feels like to be John Cena or something like that. And of course, anytime you hear John Cena, you get boos. But is the IWC or the Internet Wrestling Community, are they turning on Daniel Bryan? And it just really baffles me how you have someone who's put so much, who's put so much heart and soul in this company and their craft and being such an amazing wrestler and having a worldwide yes chant for just these run-of-the-mill microwave wrestling fans to say, okay, well, he's yesterday's news. That really bugs me about a certain group of wrestling fans. A lot of people just don't understand just the time that just really appreciating people that's put all their heart and soul into business. And Daniel Bryan's done that. And for me to hear people just kind of turn their back on Daniel Bryan just because they want something new, those wrestling fans should never watch wrestling again, in my opinion.
They probably shouldn't. And the Daniel Bryan, I mean, they've been drawing this out for so long. It seems like they want to keep doing that. And I don't think Kane can do anything to really boost his credibility or Daniel Bryan's credibility. I mean, Bryan's going to be fine no matter what they do with him. I mean, people are going to get behind him. Yeah, you hear the boos. But I think it's the boos because they're just, what are you going to do with this guy? I mean, he's world champion. But he's not on the same level as, like, the John Cena's and the Orton's, I don't think. I mean, it feels like he's still
I think that's a booking thing, though. I think that's a book. I don't think that's a Daniel Bryan thing. I think that's a booking thing.
Well, if that's what they want to do with it, that's fine. But in a way, I kind of still see him as a struggling mid-carder. Even though he's got the belts and everything, they've just kind of suppressed him to that point.
Exactly.
Who knows?
Exactly. And that's my thing. Like, it wasn't – I think that Daniel Bryan, the yes chance, and Daniel Bryan as a superstar, and a lot of people say – and this rings true in many cases. that the title chase is better than the capture. And of course, we see that a lot in wrestling and in pro wrestling, which is why in my article that I wrote today on Bleacher Report, I have Daniel Bryan chasing the title again, which I prefer. And in one of the comments that I have is, you know, he's had two WrestleMania moments. You know, someone else should have the WrestleMania moment. I think that's a ridiculous comment. You know, thank you all for commenting and reading my articles, but I think that's a, you know, with all due respect, I think that's a ridiculous comment, because if you think about people, and again, it goes back to the fast-paced society wrestling fans that that we have. And it's sad to me because people are saying that Daniel Bryan has had his WrestleMania moment when, let's not forget, Hulk Hogan, for all of those years when he had his WrestleMania moment, those were important moments. When The Undertaker had many WrestleMania moments, when Triple H had WrestleMania moments, John Cena had a WrestleMania moment, Steve Austin had multiple WrestleMania moments, The Rock had multiple WrestleMania moments. And so when you think about that echelon of WrestleMania, you know, headliners, you can't just throw Daniel Bryan out just because he had one WrestleMania moment. That just makes no sense. If you want to make Daniel Bryan one of the top tier stars in the future, you got to, that's the whole point. You got to have him continue to have WrestleMania moments, and so he can be one of those staple people of the future, the staple wrestlers of the future. And we have to understand this here. We're thinking about, if we think about 3 to 5 years down the road, you know, at that point, Triple H would probably not be wrestling anymore, probably wrestling very, very sparsely. I'm sure Batista would be out of there. Randy Orton would be wrapping it up, although he's still young. He's only 33. But he'll be 37, but he's been in the business for so long, and he's still not that exciting. So I don't see him really, I really wouldn't call him the future of the WWE, although, interestingly enough, it wouldn't surprise me to see Randy Orton in the WWE for another 10-plus years just because he's so young. But when you think about it, you have to consider people like Daniel Bryan, people like, I mean, that's really, I mean, Bray Wyatt, I suppose you can say. Cesaro's another good name. Roman Reigns is another good name. You have to really focus on those names for the future. The future is now when it comes to really strongly booking those names that I just mentioned. And Daniel Bryan's going to have to keep having WrestleMania moments for him to be one of the most, you know, one of those memorable superstars for the future.
Memorable superstars from the future. Yeah, I get. And he can be. They just seem to hope it. And it just, and with Randy Orton being there for 10 more years, good Lord. TNA needs to start knocking on his door. Please.
Randy Orton and TNA, wow. I mean, I can't even fathom that right now, honestly.
And he can take Batista with him.
Randy Orton. But here's the thing. If Randy Orton and Batista went to TNA, I don't know. I mean, I would rather see Randy Orton and Batista, if they were no longer with the WWE, I would rather for them to be in Jeff Jarrett's new promotion, Global Force Wrestling. I would rather see that than Randy Orton and Batista in TNA. I think TNA has really created a ceiling on themselves, just because there's just such a negative aura, a bad stigma when it comes to TNA and Impact Wrestling. I just, like I said, they've tried many good legends there. They've had good names and still have good names, but there's just a ceiling that's in TNA that, yeah, it saddens me. It saddens me. Like I said, it saddens me because I think they have a lot of potential. It's just that, you know, there's a ceiling. And so Jeff Jarrett's launched a new wrestling promotion that's coming up called Global Force Wrestling. There hasn't been any big name wrestlers confirmed for it yet, but it's his big launch with the creator of Biggest Loser partnering up with him. So, you know, that's definitely some good potential as far as airtime and production and money that's behind the promotion. So, hey, I'm up for it. I'm on board with the idea. I think that the pro wrestling scene needs more diversity, because right now we see TNA and we see ROH, and like you said, I mean, ROH is a good promotion. ROH is a great promotion, and you know, especially with AJ Styles there. And you know, as far as my ROH talk for the week, you know, I think. The feud with the Young Bucks and Red Dragon is you know, going very well, and just, you know, for the tag team titles. And I think, you know, that Tommaso Ciampa, you know, he and Jay Lethal, I think that's you know, they've been doing a great job going at it as far as Michael Elgin with the IWGP title. I think that they have a lot of potential going on, and but, you know, I don't know. Like I said before, their production is just horrible. And you can't, you know, this isn't the days of ECW anymore. You can't wrestle in bingo halls and expect to be a legitimate promotion on you know, televised. So, but their talent pool is amazing, though. I mean, it just really is. Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, you know, they're the two token people of ROH, and two of the, you know, biggest stars in the past 5 years in WCW. So it goes to show that Ring of Honor has the talent, but the production is absolutely horrible. So this Jeff Jarrett promotion, this launch, I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited to see how it would insert itself into the current fiber or the current fabric of professional wrestling. And let me ask you this. If you had three big names, realistically, so I don't think saying John Cena would be a realistic answer. If you think of three names that aren't with the company anymore or who would probably jump ship to GFW, Global Force Wrestling, Jeff Jarrett's new promotion, who would those three people be to you? What three people do you would you choose? Again, these are people who aren't with the WWE anymore, or contracts about to expire, or aren't with TNA anymore, contracts about to expire, or who would be willing to jump ship? What three people can you think of?
I'd like to think AJ Styles. I mean, he could draw the crowd. I mean, any average wrestling thing to AJ Styles is. I think a lot of the TNA people that are no longer there, Christopher Daniels, you know, I mean, it's...
Yep.
I mean, they could do wonders for Jeff Jarrett's Global Force Wrestling. So, and I mean, Jeff Jarrett, he's in the business. He knows the business. He can start the promotion. I mean, he started TNA. I don't know if he's responsible for what's going on with it now. But anyway, I mean, those are at least two names I can really think of. Another name, I don't know. You maybe need an older guy in there, like maybe like a Rhino, or maybe Chris Jericho.
I think those are interesting choices. I think those are good choices. I don't think Jericho would jump. I think Jericho's a WWE guy through and through. But Rhino would be a very good choice. Plus, since he's not really doing much at all when it comes to ROH or, of course, WWE, he was with ROH when he was with Scum, But since Scum disbanded a while ago, he's, you know, not with ROH anymore on a regular basis. So I think that he would be a really good choice to be. I wouldn't really, I don't know about a main eventer, but maybe an upper mid-card talent. As far as AJ Styles is concerned, absolutely. I mean, that goes without saying. I think AJ Styles would be a fantastic choice. I think Christopher Daniels will also be a fantastic choice. It just saddens me that they would let him go. He's so talented. The guy's like in his mid-40s now. And so, or approaching his mid-40s. I think this would be a last hurrah for him. And I think that he needs to have some type of world title. As much as he's bust his butt in TNA and ROH, he's never won the world title on either promotion. And that's so crazy to me. Samoa Joe's won the world title for both promotions. AJ Styles never won the ROH world title, but he's been TNA world champion many times. And, you know, you have your, you know, like CM Punk has been WWE and ROH champion, Daniel Bryan, WWE and ROH world champion. And so you have your talent pool, but for some reason, Christopher Daniels never was world champion in either promotion. And so he needs to have some type of main event push. And I think him being one of the top guys in GFW would work. They just need some heavy hitters, though. And one of the names that I thought about was Dolph Ziggler. I think that Dolph Ziggler would be a very good addition to GFW. Of course, probably not as Dolph Ziggler, because that's a WWE name. But I think he would be good as a top guy, because I'm sure that he's disgruntled. Zack Ryder repackaged. What do you think about that? If he was a repackaged gimmick altogether, how do you think Zack Ryder would fare in GFW?
He would do well. Again, he's a name that the average wrestler that, you know, pays attention to wrestling would know. And Zack Ryder himself, I mean, he's a great talent. I mean, I've thought that for a long time. At least the last 3, 4, 5 years he's been there. They've always used him as a mid-carder or less, usually less. But, I mean, he's somebody that for a smaller promotion could probably add a lot to the bill, add a lot to the card, some legitimacy that, hey, this wrestling show started up by the legendary Jeff Jarrett's got Zack Ryder on it. I mean, great. That would be – I'd go see that because, I mean, Zack Ryder is an awesome talent. And he's got a lot more to offer than the WWE's really honed into and let him use. So you can't – what's the worst that could happen? I mean, seriously.
Very true. Very true. Great point. Question on the table right now, chat room and Twitter at Crave Wrestling. Or Derek, who just continues to just hog the spotlight when it comes to trivia. And this is – we've been – it's been 111 episodes, and the same thing happens. I guess you couldn't hold on long enough. You're right. The American males. That was probably one of my least favorite tag teams of all time. And I was a big fan of Babyfaces back when I was a kid and growing up as a teen. I was a big fan of Babyfaces. I liked a few heels. For some odd reason, I thought that Vader was cool. I don't know why. I was big, you know. Of course, Sting's my favorite, but when Vader feuded with Sting, I wasn't a big fan of that at all. But I definitely think that. I definitely think that the American males, and like I said, I was a big fan of the faces, but there was just something about the American males to me that was just way too cheesy. Oh, my goodness, I couldn't stand it. The theme song was just atrocious. The clap that they would do, it was just so cheesy and annoying. And the American males, yeah, the American males was just one of my least favorite tag teams of all time. Just absolutely horrible to me. But You said what about the American males?
Oh, the ding-a-lings or whatever they were called.
Oh, the ding-dongs. Yeah, the ding-dongs. That was back in Jim Herd days. The American males was Bischoff days, actually. So that was like 95. Jim Herd was one of the worst promoters of all time. So, but when you have a team called the Ding Dongs, there you go. Pretty much says it all, actually. But I think it's important to understand that. I think it's important to understand that Jim Herd will always be remembered as being the worst big event or the worst big brand promoter of all time. I think that's pretty. I think it's pretty safe to say that as far as Jim Herd is concerned. So interesting, but I definitely don't think that that Jim Herd would ever want to step foot into wrestling again. But the American males, but to his defense, the American males was not a Jim Herd thing, but they were just horrible. Next we have John Cena and the Usos defeating the Wyatt family, which, a clean loss by the Wyatt family. Very surprising. And I've said it before, a big fan of the Usos, so I'm definitely okay with the Usos winning. And John, it's been over 2 years, and we've had thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of listeners. And so I think there's a big number of people that understands how I feel about John Cena, but I was cool with this six-man tag team. I think it was a good match, and I think that John Cena and the Usos, it pretty much gave leverage to Bray Wyatt to me. And like I said, Cena and Wyatt, I'll talk about my article after this Raw portion, but I just don't. I'm not into Cena Bray. Just a bunch of stipulations. I think it's ridiculous. But this match was good, and the Wyatt family losing cleanly was a surprise to me.
No, and yeah, the Usos won. I know you've always loved the Usos for a long time, and I don't hate them. They're great. They're a good tag team, legitimate. And them teaming with Cena, take on the Wyatt family. Yeah, it was more of a filler match than anything, as far as I'm concerned. And it does nothing to make my interest more into the John Cena and the Wyatt feud. So, I mean, I don't think the match did anything for Raw. So, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I think it was a good match to see, but it was like at the 9 o'clock hour, which was surprising to me that this was at the 9 o'clock hour. I know that they are, a big fan of having big money matches and heavy hitting matches, for each hour, the top of the hour, but I definitely think that this should have been a little further down the card. So, but all in all, it was a good match to me, and it was good to. It was surprising to see the Wyatt family lose cleanly, which was a good element to it. And then, of course, Bray Wyatt has to cut a promo to make himself still look good afterwards. I think that was ridiculous. Evolution has their moment in the ring, and they get jumped by the Shield. Shield looking dominant, which I like. It was good stuff. At that point in time, they mentioned about the rematch at Payback. Next we get Nikki Bella versus Natalya. Crickets. This is all based on a moment of Total Divas where Natalya drew a picture of Nikki and John Cena, and this was just such a waste of time. I'm trying to figure out what segment was worse, this match or the Alicia Fox segment after she lost. It's a tough one. It's a real tough one. Both of them were just horrible.
It was bad. I mean, I don't like how they're going to take this Divas show on E and bring it over to Monday Night Raw. Because I don't watch the Divas show. Maybe I should. Is it a good show? I don't. The Divas just don't spark as much as they should.
Okay.
Alpha Male and all that good stuff. But I don't know. It just seemed, again, just like a filler match. And it's like I'd sit there and I'm like, if somebody was to just tune into this, not being a wrestling fan, but not being not a wrestling fan, I would turn the channel right away. And I think WWE needs to work on stuff like that, because you're not going to bring in new people just based on their looks, because the talent in the ring just doesn't match what I expect from the WWE.
I agree. And you make a good point as far as just, hey, man, why don't you watch pro wrestling again? It's, you know, I know you haven't watched it for a few years. How about you turn on Raw? There's some really cool stuff going on right now. And so if I decide to say, oh, okay, sure, and I turn it on and Nikki Bella and Natalya's fighting, I would think you're an idiot and I wouldn't watch wrestling again. So, yeah, I agree. It was just a total waste of time. And then we get Sheamus looking like Superman, defeating Rybacksel, you know, simultaneously. I like Sheamus. I like how they are pushing him as a face and how they're really bringing prestige back to the U.S. title in the first time in I don't know how long. So I'm a big fan of that. What I'm not a big fan of is the fact that he just basically beat Rybacksel back-to-back. I did not like that. Only because I really think a feud with Ryback and Sheamus would have been such a much, much better angle. I think you have to draw an angle for payback, and I think that Sheamus and Ryback would be a really good feud for the U.S. title. And, you know, Curtis Axel, whatever, he has no charisma, no nothing. But Ryback, at least he has that big, bulky, you know, he has that big bulkness to him. He could be a dominant big guy, and he could be a threat to Sheamus' title reign. So I definitely think they should have omitted that part out of Raw. They should have had, you know, Sheamus beat Curtis Axel, have the Texas Cloverleaf or the Irish Cloverleaf, whatever you want to call it. If you want, it should have had a Cloverleaf on Axel taps, and then Ryback beats up Sheamus to lead to a U.S. title match for payback. I think that would have been a much better idea than just to have Sheamus beat both of them consecutively on the same night.
That was ridiculous. I mean, seriously, you just make that tag team and both people in the tag team just look like schmucks. It doesn't do anything for them. It does nothing for Sheamus, really. I beat Rybacksel. Look how easy that was. Well, next time Rybacksel goes into a big tag team title match, you're going to remember that Sheamus beat both of them back-to-back in the same night. So it's starting to get back to where Ryback and whatever, Kurt Hennig's kid, is just irrelevant, and they're not making any sense like they did a few months before they turned into Rybacksel, so.
Yeah. Next we have that Stephanie McMahon segment where she's calling out Daniel Bryan, and then Kane drags Daniel Bryan, and I just think that this was another waste of time. I mean, there was just too many waste of time moments on Raw. They just really tried their best to just fill up the time frame with just ridiculousness. And I think this was one of them. You have Daniel Bryan announce that he's injured, and then after the announcement, you do an injury angle. That makes absolutely no sense. We live in WWE is still kayfabe. You know, there's still a majority of WWE is kayfabe. Of course, we have the network that gets more in depth, and we have shows like Total Divas, which is also scripted though. But at least we still have a reality version of that. We still have, you know, real marriages, and you know that goes forth. So there's a more reality, you know, perspective or reality standpoint, a reality angle when it comes to wrestling and wrestling characters. But, you know, kayfabe still exists. So if you're going to, you know, but pick one or the other. If you want to be real, be real. If you're going to be kayfabe. And why in the world would you do the injury angle after you announce that you're injured? Of course, you know, we live in a wrestling society of dirt sheets galore, so a lot of people knows these things before they happen, but there's a lot of people who don't. And I just think that injury angle was absolutely ridiculous. Why write Daniel Bryan off with an injury angle if he already said that he was injured and he's about to get surgery? I think that was terrible booking and very mistimed.
It was kind of ridiculous. I mean, again, the whole Daniel Bryan thing, they've just totally, I mean, I remember back when they were building up Cena, and it made sense, even though I'm not a Cena fan, I know you're not, but the Daniel Bryan thing, it's just like they stepped in gum, and it just, they don't know what to do with it. They have it there, it's there, they want to pick it off, they want to get rid of it, but they want to keep it there for some reason, I guess. I just, it makes me sick just to see how this is going about. And Daniel Bryan is a talent that deserves a lot more than this. Crying out loud. Come on. I mean, just, he's injured. Good for that. But then just to play it out the way they do, it makes no sense. It's boring. It's getting boring. The whole Daniel Bryan thing is just getting boring. And people want to see something happen with him or they don't. He can just easily be forgotten about if that's what WWE wants to do. I don't think they do. That would be bad for business. Bad for business. But, and if anything else, bring in James Cornette.
Oh, boy.
There it was.
You know what
there
I...
was James.
Yeah, all roads lead to James E. Cornette. Although he brought in Smoky Mountain wrestlers in WWE television, and they lasted not even a hop, skip, and a jump. Maybe a hop and a half a skip, and they were out of there like yesterday's news. It was ridiculous when they brought in the Heavenly Bodies and feuding with the Midnight Express, and yikes. It was all bad. And next we have your boy Fandango losing to Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're having some. I wonder if they're going to split up Layla. I don't understand what they're doing with them. They have them like tongue locking now, as we saw on SmackDown and Raw. And yeah, okay. Or they're in a real relationship. I don't know. I really don't care. But, you know, this is to get back at Summer Rae, but there's some type of dissension a little bit because he kind of got distracted by Layla, which helped Dolph Ziggler. This is just a really convoluted story that I really don't have much time to really care about because it's just Fandango.
Oh, it's just Fandango, the future of flamenco dancing. So, yeah, I get it. I know. And it's the whole Summer Rae, you're trying to get back at her. Who knows? It's not really going to pan out to be anything that great. Nothing that Fandango's actually worthy of. So, let him and Adam Rose go at it, and I think that could probably put a spark back in both entities.
Indeed. Next, we have Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to tell you what. I was nearly laughing out loud when Lana actually said Duggan. And I tweeted that almost immediately when she said that. Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And it was just absolutely hilarious to me. But I'll tell you what, though. I am still not sold on Rusev. I think he has potential. The music's cool. The build is cool. The Muay Thai stance is cool. I get it. But I really don't see much more. And I really don't know who they should feud him against. I'm okay with the Sheamus Rusev feud for the U.S. title. I can see, although neither of them are from the U.S., which is interesting. But, yeah, I can see some type of, you know, Rusev wanting the U.S. title to prove that, you know, Russia's the supreme country. I get that. I can see that. And I think that Sheamus and Rusev will have some very hard-hitting matches. So I'll be okay with the Sheamus and Rusev feud. But I just don't know yet about Rusev. I'm not sold. And what is this about Big E being so just degraded? I think it's absolutely just horrendous to look at Big E as far as how the WWE is booking him as of late. Absolutely horrible. And for him to make a save for Hacksaw Jim Duggan just to get beat up, that's absolutely embarrassing. And it just really angers me to see how the WWE is booking Big E.
Big E, I don't know. Maybe him and Rusev could have a future tag team together, because singles-wise, I don't see Rusev doing anything. I mean, they had a build-up behind him. He's this big Belgian brute, you know, big whoop. Well, I mean, we've seen him before. We'll see him again. I mean, that was just kind of a poor way to bring him in. Not that his talent-wise, I don't want to knock him on that. But it's just kind of a run-of-the-mill, almost like an Ivan Drago from Rocky IV or something.
Yeah.
I just don't see anything else really coming out of him. I mean, they need to do something with him. The path he's got right now just isn't going to work. Pair him with somebody and see where it goes. He could be a good tag team Dolph Ziggler Midgard type of guy, maybe. Yeah, you never know what's going to happen in the WWE. They don't say that anymore, and they should.
Because I think at this point you do know what's going to happen in WWE.
Good point. Good save.
I think that's what the booking's so predictable these days. But I think the people want to see Rusev keep coming out just because they would be able to see Lana. I think that's why many people can endure Rusev, actually. Next, we have Cody Rhodes defeating Damian Sandow. I'm just waiting for a Cody Rhodes and the Goldust match. A lot of people, it's been reported that Cody's going to be the heel. Don't want to see this anymore. That was a WrestleMania thing. Now the train has long gone, in my opinion. And Cody Rhodes does not need to be a heel. He was starting to get pretty natural as a face, never really had an opportunity to get really, really over as a face. Feuded with Sandow in the beginning of his face run, and that's really all that he got. That's really all the success that he saw as a face. Of course, reuniting with his brother and the whole feud against the Authority and the Shield, I think that was great. But I really don't want to see either of them turn heel. I think, like I said, I think that train's long gone. But Cody Rhodes won cleanly as a babyface. It's just difficult to follow, and I don't think that this will benefit either one of them if this team splits. I really, really don't think it'll benefit either one of them.
It won't benefit. The only thing that they have is their name. That's what makes them so unique and awesome, because they come from, go ahead with your Dusty Rhodes, whatever you want to do with that. But however,
they come from a plumber, the son. They are sons of a son of a plumber from Texas, eating pork and beans. That's the American dream.
The American Dwayne. I blinded down to King and Queens. Dying on pork and beans. But anyway, so yeah, that makes them great. Everyone loves Gold Dust. People know who Gold Dust is, especially us Attitude Era fans. It's been watching it for years and years and years and years. Cody Rhodes, his best position is just stay where he's at. They're not going to do that. They want these guys to split because that's going to make people watch. I mean, obviously it will for a couple weeks, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly, a couple weeks.
At best, so
yeah.
I mean, it'd be a small time investment that's just going to end up not benefiting anybody. So.
Yeah. Next, we have Roman Reigns against Batista. I think this match really could have been something. I think it was kind of slow. It picked up a bit, but just Roman Reigns versus Batista on paper. That sounds really good. I'll tell you what, though, I like the new. Like, I'm starting to. The new Batista is starting to grow on me. The beard, the hair growing out. I like that look. It doesn't have that generic Hollywood look that he tried to portray when he first came. That with the skinny jeans and just the undersized, you know, track jacket. That was just horrible. But this Batista, I think, fits very well with Evolution. Fits very well as a heel. Growing the beard out, looking more, you know, hard-nosed and bad guy and heelish. And I like that type of Batista. And so him going against Roman Reigns, I think it was a good idea. Of course, we saw the interference with the Shield and Evolution. And then, you know, a bunch of mid-card heels come out. And Evolution's still getting the upper hand by using chairs. So, the Shield getting the upper hand with using chairs. So the Shield, you know, they shined. You know, they had their moment. They looked very good. They were booked to look really good at the end of this Raw. And I think it's a good way to cause suspense to see if they're going to lose at Payback. So making the Shield look good right now is a very, very good idea for the WWE. They need to put the Shield over because these are the three of the future names of the WWE. So they need to get over as best as possible.
And I totally agree with that. They do. Evolution can be a great spike for that, even though earlier in the show I said Evolution is just kind of a dump of what they used to be. Anything Triple H is involved with is going to cause a big stir in WWE. Whether it's with Randy Orton, Kofi Kingston, anybody. But, I mean, the Shield is in a good spot now, better than what they were a couple months ago, 3 months ago maybe. So they did right with this. Keep the Shield in the forefront of your mind when you think of WWE and what's coming up next, what's coming up on Raw and SmackDown. You know, the Shield's going to be a part of it. And that's good for business. That's really good for business. So keep the ball rolling. What else you got?
Indeed. Awesome stuff. Well, we'll do part one of King of the Ring this week. The part one is going to be the non-pay-per-view events that there were a total of six of them before the actual pay-per-view events started to come in 1993. So that was very, very interesting there. Consecutive years from 85 to 89 and then 1991. We already spoke on, you know, we already had our moment with SmackDown and definitely had our moment with Impact Wrestling. And we talked about ROH too, so let's get into the flavor of the week. King of the Ring 1985, and like I said, this is part one, so we're going to talk about the non-pay-per-view shows this week, and then we'll talk about, well, not counting the ones after 2002. We'll talk about that next week as well. But from 85 to 91, there was a total of six of them. Starts off with the first one was 1985. Don Morocco actually won that tournament. It was in Massachusetts, Foxborough. And interesting names that we that were included were, of course, Pedro Morales, one of the longest champions of WWE history, and Tito Santana. Don Morocco ended up winning it. Iron Sheik goes to the finals. So, very interesting first King of the Ring with Don Morocco being the winner in 1985.
1985, that's a long time ago. Not really, depends. But Don Morocco, what was his name other than Don Morocco?
His nickname was The Rock.
Who managed him?
He was managed by... He was managed by, if I'm not mistaken, the Grand Wizard, right?
Oh, Superstar, Billy Graham.
No. Billy Graham, but I don't know. You might want to check that out. I think, because I know Albano managed him too, though.
Yeah, he may have, but.
Yeah, Captain Lou Albano managed him too. But I think he debuted with the Grand Wizard. And I know that Albano managed him as a heel.
I didn't say debut. I said during his face turn.
Oh, during his face turn. I didn't hear that part. You must have really, really low.
But anyway, so yeah, Don Morocco, I mean, he's a solid performer. I remember him. Maybe we could have him on the show sometime. But back in 1985, I mean, he was big money for the WWE. So good for him. What about 1986? I was in kindergarten at that time.
1986, we had Pedro Morales going to the finals this time, but the winner being Harley Race. How about that? We're talking about last week. We were talking about top heels of the 80s, and Harley Race was one of them. And so, this was one of his big heel moments for the WWE. Although most of his heel run was NWA, but once the WWE in the mid 80s had marginal success, became King of the Ring in 1986, and that's why many people. He became King Harley Race and feuded with Dugan. So Harley Race winning the King of the Ring in 1986. Other notable names were, Dan Spivey was in there at the time. Of course, Junkyard Dog, Paul Orndorff, Nikolai Volkoff, Piper was in the 1986 King of the Ring, George the Animal Steel, Billy Jack Haynes, and the Iron Sheik. Paige and Mike Rotunda was in there too. So, but Harley Race pulls it off in 1986.
Pulls it off in 1986. That's an all-star name that you just, the all-star names that you just belted out. And Harley Race again. I mean, he's probably one of the top 10 professional wrestlers that you can talk about as far as heels or just anybody who's an accomplished wrestler. Good for Harley Race. Just another notch in the belt for him. His prominence was way before King of the Ring, WWE, or any of that, but good for him. He became King Harley Race, feuded with the Junkyard Dog in WrestleMania 3. It was a good turn for him. So, I mean, it's probably the best thing to happen to him while he was in WWE.
Absolutely. 1987. One interesting thing that I want to mention about 1987's Royal Rumble is that S.D. Jones advanced defeating Sika. Yeah, he actually won a match, ladies and gentlemen. But interestingly enough, he still lost to King Kong Bundy, the same person who beat him at WrestleMania. So For some reason, SD Jones just can't get past King Kong Bunny. But Randy Savage ended up winning that, winning the 1987 King of the Ring. I remember it was pretty cool King of the Ring. 1987, Randy Savage was starting to become really a really uprising mid-carder into being a top guy, and defeats King Kong Bundy. And it was a pretty interesting and pretty memorable King of the Ring. Had a really good plethora of talent as well.
Yeah, wasn't Randy Savage, he's still Intercontinental Champion during that King of the Ring match?
'87.
I mean, good for Randy Savage. I mean, that's the IC Championship around his waist at the time for the King of the Ring, and to actually win the King of the Ring. Good for him, because obviously you see 1988, he won the tournament at WrestleMania 4, so.
Yeah.
A stepping stone for him, so, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Indeed, yeah. He was a heel at the time, but he was one of those people who were starting to get cheered, you know, because he was a heel, but he was starting to get face pops so much. You know, that it was one of those things that he was starting to get cheered. But I think if I recall, he may have. I remember him being Intercontinental Champion. No, he was Intercontinental Champion. I think in early '87. I know that the Honky Tonk Man was champ in '87 as well. So I think Honky Tonk Man might have been champ at that time. I'll just figure that out. '88, real quick, Ted DiBiase, Randy Savage going to the finals of the King of the Ring in '88, but losing by count out to Ted DiBiase in '88. So memorable moment for Ted DiBiase, Hall of Famer. Shawn Michaels was in that. That one too. Marty Jannetty was as well, but Marty Jannetty lost to the Red Rooster, oddly enough. But interesting, Ken Patera was also in that one. So nice, interesting array of talent. But Ted DiBiase ended up pulling that one off and becoming the 1988 King of the Ring.
1988 King of the Ring, and you kind of see a pattern. Seems like all the heels were winning King of the Ring. That just kind of shows you. I mean, they wanted to develop their heels at that time. They were very heel heavy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, Ted DiBiase, give him anything, he'll make it look like gold.
Yeah, absolutely. 1989 King of the Ring. It wasn't one in 1990. Tito Santana pulls it off. Arriba!
He pulled it off. Probably one of the best accomplishments he's had in his wrestling career.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Totally.
But. 1989, Tito Santana, give it to him.
Yeah,
El Matador.
And then finally, real quick, 1991, before he won the pay-per-view, won in 93, Bret Hart won the 91 by defeating Erwin R. Schyster in the end. Ricky Steamboat and Ted DiBiase had a really good match that was a time-limit draw. But wasn't too big selection. The Undertaker was the Undertaker was in that, but yeah, Bret Hart pulls off for 91.
Well, good for 91. I noticed they didn't have one in 1990. However, we'll never know. But
yeah,
Bret Hart, good for him. And that's kind of the start of his uprise. Was he Intercontinental Champion as well? Because he just beaten Mr. Perfect at SummerSlam.
Yeah, be heck. Yeah. Yep, beat him at SummerSlam. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. That was part one of King of the Ring. Next week, part two, we'll talk about the pay-per-views. Thank you. Very full, very complete show as always. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you so much for listening. Until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling. God bless. Daddy loves Elijah. And have a great week. Goodbye. God bless.